Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, or I'm sorry, the Take It Easy radio show, live on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. If you're interested in the Take It Easy podcast, you can check that out anywhere and everywhere that you get podcasts. Look up Take It Easy there. We are live for the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Force of habit a little bit. I guess I'm thinking a bit about our first topic of the day because it's been weighing on my mind for a good close to 24 hours now. Welcome in, everybody. I hope you are having a great day so far, however and whenever you are listening. Let's talk about this George Floyd, Derek Chauvin verdict. And we're just going to come right off the bat with it here today. No pleasantry introductions other than our normal thing. We're not going to review baseball, even though I do anticipate that by the end of this show, we will be breaking out into commentary of my San Diego Padres playing a Wednesday afternoon game against the Brewers to try and avoid going to 500. Hashtag regression to the mean. Hashtag they're going to turn it around at some point. That's not really a hashtag. Just wanted to throw that out there. But the reason that George Floyd and Derek Chauvin and what's gone on in Minnesota has been weighing on my mind is because of lack thereof of accountability for people who don't recognize when it's time to just take a back seat. And I've gone now, for those who may not know the full story behind me, I'm a white dude from California, and I grew up with a lot of privilege and grew up in a community that was overwhelmingly white, went to an overwhelmingly white high school, and it was only through the gaining of perspective that I was able to change a lot of the ways I used to see the world because I just wasn't exposed to other forms of life. And I also acknowledge that there are a lot of blind spots that exist for me. I'm 19 going on 20 at this point, and living in Northern California. Like, there is blind spots that I am not accustomed to, of course, and obviously it's not like I know everything. I'm always constantly seeking perspective, constantly seeking more information and a better way to do some of this stuff in the information world that I am growing up in and will soon have to absorb some sort of power in, or at least my generation will have to absorb some sort of power in. So with that on the front end, I've been, from outside of this radio show, the way we come here is from our podcast, the Take It Easy podcast, and that comes from our perspective on Instagram. And we have over 50,000 Instagram followers, and a lot of this is a learning experience for myself. And so when the Derek Chauvin trial came around, I myself personally, outside of this story, was taken a little bit away from it. I wasn't someone following the news every day of what's going on in the trial. You hear the stories about the blue wall collapsing, about how police officers are willing to go to the stand and talk about their experiences and break the blue wall of silence a little bit and protecting the person to your left and to your right, regardless of what it is that they've done, but overwhelmingly haven't really followed the story. I was waiting more for a verdict to come in, and then the repercussions of such would play out as they did over Tuesday and now into Wednesday, because it was going to be, no matter what, one of those moments where everyone stopped what they were doing and they were going to wait out and see the verdict and respond accordingly. And ultimately, because it was a guilty verdict, we didn't see a lot of the protests going on across America that we would have seen had Derek Chauvin not been found guilty on both second and third degree murder. And because of this, a lot of the story comes to reactions about accountability, and corporate justice starts to take over. And I'll use that phrase corporate justice as we go along here. But the first place is talking about not being my place. And one thing I realized when I saw the story come out yesterday afternoon and that the verdict was read guilty, I actually wasn't one of those people who was waiting around to see the story because I hadn't been following it. I knew that they had gone on into deliberations, and when they had decided within, 10 hours that they had agreed on a decision, that the decision had come down that he was probably going to be guilty. I didn't know when they were going to do it. Obviously, with everyone else, learned a bit after the fact that Derek Chauvin had been found guilty. And so from this point onward, I was looking at this story and thinking that this was going to be like a monumental thing. And what I found was that everyone had something to say about it. And I had nothing to say about it. And the platform matters a lot, too. Like, we're talking about a podcast in which, we talk about the day-to-day stuff, but we've done the woke social justice ideology. And again, woke is used as a weaponizing word here. I'm not using it as a weapon. I'm using it because it's the closest thing I can do to describe what we've been doing, is talking about these issues, talking about being an ally, but acknowledging that I'm a white dude from California with a lot of privilege, will never have to experience such things as what we're going to see, what happened to George Floyd. That will never be something I have to worry about from a police officer. And so with that acknowledgement there, I recognize that this one's probably not my place to say something. And then I found out everyone had something to say about it, which it reminded me of the thing with the black boxes back in June, because that, I felt, gave me some perspective, because I had the ability in that moment to see it and think, this feels wrong. This feels like virtue signaling. This feels like saying something that maybe trying to just signify something for selfish reasons. And for myself, I have to have the perspective to recognize that's not my place. This is not my fight. I can be an ally in this fight, but this will never be my fight. And unfortunately, if you could wave a magic wand and fix problems of centuries dating back to taking Africans from the western coast of Africa, bringing them to Americas, to the Americas, and turning and the modern economy of slavery built on the backs of black bodies. If you could wave a wand and wish all those problems away, you could do it. But ultimately, this is my problem because white people are the problem, but it's not my problem and not my fight to make. Unfortunately, there's just certain things I can't do because I don't have the perspective, the experiences, and have the blind spots around it. And a lot of what I had to learn from this was going to protests in June, using that platform because there were no sports to talk about police brutality and make statements and try and use my platform for some sort of good when, the biggest push since the biggest single, 3-week push since the civil rights movement occurred during the pandemic in the quote unquote summer of George Floyd. Not my words, but it's a good way to describe it. It's the summer of George Floyd. And so as that played out in our lexicon, that's when all of a sudden you knew Derek Chauvin was going to be tried for murder and was going to be put in this position. In Minnesota, to their everlasting credit, when Kim Potter killed Dante Wright last week, to their everlasting credit, they were able to get the police officer fired and bring charges, lesser charges than Derek Chauvin, but bring charges against Kim Potter. And that is progress in its plain form. If you look at where we were back in June and where we are now, or where we were in April with Breonna Taylor, where they still never brought charges against the officers responsible for the murder of Breonna Taylor, when you look at it from that context, you can start to see small steps towards progress. change is only observable over a long period of time. And 10 months is a long period of time. Relatively, it's not a lot, but you can still observe some sort of change across 10 months. Maybe not big societal change. That will take generations. I think that's Hillary Clinton, also stolen from someone else, I'm guessing from Hillary Clinton, about taking generations to change hearts. I don't know who the original credit is to, but it's going to take generations. And that's one of the things that I was talking about earlier, is that I'm a Gen Z, you know, 19, 20-year-old, and I am understanding that our generation is more anti-racist than previous generations. There's not a ton of, you know, racism in its pure, like, in its forms that we see now with people storming the Capitol. Not a lot coming from people my age. It's obviously still there. You're never going to have a total consensus. If we had that, then the fight wouldn't be going on as long as it has. It's just something that's ingrained in America's core. And something I talked about before is, when you have something that's broken at its foundation, how do you fix a building broken at its foundation? Most of the times, you have to knock it down and build it back up again. So the solution will probably be America at whole, and the system that has been set up is going to have to be knocked down and started all over again, which creates unintended consequences. But at some point, maybe I'll be alive to see it, but at some point, America will get knocked down and built all the way up again. Not sure when it's going to be. Might be in my lifetime, might not. We'll see. People like talking about civil war within like the next 20 years, and I think that the path that we're on in terms of partisanship going in opposite directions leaves this as a real possibility. But ultimately, the foundation will be knocked down and built up again. I just don't know when it will be, or if I'll live to see the day, or if most of us will live to see the day. It's just something that we know is inevitable, because no great dynasty has ever lasted. Nobody has ever gone and not fallen off at some point. Every run comes to an end at some point, some longer than others. Some have the sustainable model, and some have the resources to continue to adjust. But when you sap those resources, or you sap the will to continue, all of a sudden, then you have someone falls and someone else takes their place. We're seeing it with China right now. Someone fell in Asia, China takes their place. Japan fell, and a new Japan took its place. So it's happening within the last 50, 60, 70 years if you look at world history. That's another conversation. What does this bring it back to George Floyd? What this brings back to George Floyd is the idea that this is where progress looks like. It's over a short period of time, and we kind of knew Chauvin was going to be found guilty. I hadn't been following the trial, and I was like, it seems too fitting with all the media powers that be, and with all the public opinion that can be shifted, it only seems too fitting that he would be let off as innocent in this case. It only seems too fitting that that would be the end after George Floyd. But then you start to see the seeds of progress being laid. Maybe this won't be the case in Kim Potter's trial. Maybe this won't be the case for example, the officer who killed Jacob Blake, who, by the way, this was very quiet back in the news during the George Floyd and Dante Wright protests. But the officer who killed who paralyzed Jacob Blake is now back on duty in Kenosha, Wisconsin. It's something that went very much under the radar. And this is going to be, again, it's going to take generations, and it may never fix the problem. Generations have passed before, and the problem has only gotten worse, or at the very least has been about the same. We haven't made tons of progress towards this issue. It's a very small stepping stone because there's a lot of forces at be pushing back against it. And so in this case, you can recognize that there is change happening, but also at the same time, I can contribute by just being quiet and just being an ally, and then coming on here and talking about, hey, just there's nothing I can add to the conversation that hasn't been said, or at the very least, the worst I can do is not deflect from the conversation, which brings to the Oakland Raiders, or I guess the Las Vegas Raiders now, which I didn't want to talk about it because, again, it's a deflection. It's a deflection from the story at hand because it's a news generator. And for those who don't know, Vegas put out a poorly, like, Mark Davis, I should say. Mark Davis instructed putting out a tone-deaf, I can breathe, on George Floyd a statement on George Floyd after the trial came down, and so, or after the verdict came down. And I was thinking about how can I spin this into something that's not just a deflection from the issue at hand. And then I wanted to talk about deflecting from the issue at hand, because ultimately that's what we're seeing here. This is a deflection of the real story at hand. It's something that's gravitas, and at a bigger level, it's something that people can create into content on social media. At least from my experience, that is something that is easily recognizable. You can create content out of that on social media. And I've seen a lot of people, no disrespect to any of my brethren who work in the NFL community on Instagram or Twitter, but at a certain point, my personal morals and ethics stay away from that. And I'm not trying to preach some sort of higher ground, but the reason why I wanted to stay away from this and why I feel it's important to talk about this is because it's deflecting from the event at hand. It's what Drew Brees did back in June. Ultimately, Drew Brees steered probably the most attention anyone had had towards Black Lives Matter in ever. And any kind of case like this had never done what George Floyd did, which was protest in every major city across America, even in the deep rural South, over George Floyd's death. And like 10% of the population at some point took to the streets during those 3 weeks to a month of George Floyd. And this was exactly the same idea that we were talking about with Drew Brees is now coming full circle to the Raiders. The Raiders one is going to fade to the background like a one-day news story as compared to Drew Brees, which was Drew Brees was like a four-day news story before Drew Brees called out President Trump and made three different apology statements. Like, this was a massive story that we thought was going to damage Drew Brees' reputation forever, and it didn't damage the reputation more than Tom Brady having the Trump hat in the locker. Like, it ultimately didn't hurt Drew Brees as much as we thought it would, because these news stories are like one-day stories. The Raiders thing will pass, but the problem is that George Floyd is also going to pass. George Floyd, it already happened once. George Floyd just passed and was faded to the background. We had the memories of what had happened, but at a grassroots level, the momentum didn't keep up. Change is observable over a long period of time. This is something that was going to be inevitable. I'm not saying like it's a bad thing or a good thing. Change occurs over a long period of time. It was going to be inevitable that a lot of the fervor faded to the background a bit. But deflecting from the event is something that you're always going to find a deflection from. Fox News did a great job of it yesterday when the George Floyd verdict came down. It is something that is going to fade from the background, or fade from the lexicon to the background. It'll be something we remember, and then over time we'll forget. But there will be a new George Floyd. We just saw it the other day in Dante Wright, or I guess last week would be Dante Wright. It was last Sunday. We've seen it with Dante Wright. We've seen it with Tamir Rice. We've seen it with Stephon Clark in Sacramento, which was something that brought my attention, because they basically got the game not postponed, but they had to play the basketball game in front of a near-empty arena because they were blockading the only entrance to the Golden 1 Center, which, by the way, not the greatest idea to only have one entrance to your basketball arena, but whatever. So be it, Sacramento. And now I live in Sacramento, which is why I was saying that that was part of the cool story for myself, was just seeing that play out in Sacramento with Stephon Clark, because now I have that connection to it. My opinions have grown on the issue, and I remember watching that live, like, happening in person after Stephon Clark was killed for playing in his grandma's backyard with a cell phone and was shot in the back. Again, I believe 12-year-old Stephon Clark. But this is the story of so many of these, and there will be more Stephon Clarks and George Floyds and Ahmaud Arbery's and Jacob Blake's and Dante Wright's. The rest will fade to the background. There's a reason I'm picking more modern examples. You could go to Philando Castile, or you could go to Mike Brown. Like, there's lots of different cases that we can remember, but a lot of them become names in a cycle because this is a pressing issue. We saw it in 2015 with Ferguson. Then George Floyd created a national movement, not just one outside of Ferguson. And we'll see it again when another case happens. We saw 2 days of protests after Dante Wright in Minnesota and every major city across America. There was one in Sacramento. And this is something that is change over time. This is a thing that is going to evolve. It might take a long time. It might take generations. It might take people 3, 4, 5, 6 different protests that they attend before they actually take a step up and start to work in the community for something else, like whatever that may be. They just take the next step up to saying, I'm going to be an activist in the community. I'm not just going to attend. I'm going to organize, or I'm going to call city council meetings, which you can look up those numbers or find organizations within your own community that are working on those things. I know Juice Sacramento has done awesome work over the past, 10 months since the summer of George Floyd. They've done awesome work in building up something that is sustainable long-term and can actually commit to change with other Black Lives Matter groups in Sacramento. This is a hugely important part of change, is just getting people involved and people themselves evolving by getting involved. That's a whole other point. But the idea that I was looking at is there's going to be deflections and there's going to be multiple different cases, and the Raiders are a perfect example of that this week. I didn't really conclude that exactly the correct way, because you know how we go. I talk one thing and then you get to another thing, and left and right. Not the greatest orders in the world. Pretty good, but not the greatest orders in the world. We talked a little bit about slacktivism because I mentioned the black box from a while ago. It felt like doing the same thing by talking about George Floyd now and saying, yes, this person is going to jail for murder. It felt like it's at least an accountability thing, but if that's what change looks like, if accountability is a small step in the right direction, then that's okay. I mean, we have other ways to do it. One of the ways I propose is you fire all the police officers, willing to hire them back at 33% pay cuts. If not, that'll bring younger police officers in with different inputs, different trainings, and different sensitivities towards being a police officer, and maybe at least more anti-racist, or at least willing to learn different strategies and not have old guard ways that maybe police officers 20, 30 years in the force have. That's one way to go about it. Also, defunding the police is a very real possibility. Divert funds going from the police to social work and other services within the city. Again, you're not losing money. This is the important part of defund the police, which I know people have backed off of a bit because of the phrasing, and phrasing is obviously important, and media and social media can play a big factor in this. But I was thinking about slacktivism again in this time around and why I didn't want to say anything during this, because there's nothing I could do other than divert or make the situation no different than it was before. Black boxes are a perfect example of that, because for a lot of people, that is virtue signaling. And for a lot of people, posting something is something, but it doesn't move the conversation in any direction, especially when the same 5 posts are getting reposted on one Instagram feed within like 10 stories. That's just one example I can throw out to you. So this is the interesting part about the post-George Floyd verdict, is what is slacktivism and what can you actually do to make a difference? And that's the thing that people don't realize, is that it's not a contribution. And again, I am not someone who virtue signals or likes the idea of virtue signaling. Sometimes you do it because you don't even realize you're doing it. Again, like I said, subconscious and blind spots. What we're doing right now, that could be interpreted as virtue signaling. Of course, that's a real possibility. Like, there's blind spots all over the place here when it comes to talking about slacktivism and virtue signaling. I've literally spent 20 minutes talking about this as a white dude from California, not really contributing that much to the conversation, just trying to bring in something different than the, yay, this person's going to jail, even though I myself also have issues with the prison system and why we lock people up because we don't know what to do with them. That's a whole nother thing that sounds weird without the context. So I'll try and apply a little bit of the context here, is the idea of making all non-violent crimes, all of them should start with parole. All of them should begin with house arrest. We should not have a situation. And by the way, this would impact the funding by the government, allow people to continue to collect unemployment while they're serving house arrests, continue to allow people to receive money from the government and some sort of universal basic income while they are serving out sentences, and for violent crimes, shorter sentences and working towards the rehabilitation process are even bigger. Like, bringing social workers into prisons for violent work and things like that, and parole more frequently available, and actually investing more money into the parole service, I think would do a lot of good in the policing system to stop, you know, locking people up. That's generally just a better idea. Again, that's some of the context of what I was talking about there. But again, that's a whole nother conversation about whether or not I'm happy Derek Chauvin went to jail. Again, I didn't make the game. I'm just a player in the game that was created around me. I was thinking about that same thing with LeBron and the Super League in soccer, where all of a sudden you have Arsenal is LeBron is part of Arsenal and the Fenway group. And so I found it funny that you can't hate the player. You just hate the game, because it's corporate LeBron coming in there and making that interesting case. And so can't hate the player. It's just the game that was created around him. And the man is taking his best life and making his best investment out of it. It's kind of a good strategy, but that's what brought me to that idea, is the game is kind of created around this. And so I'm just a player in the game. We're all just players in this game, and it doesn't really make that much of a difference for, you know, like long-term prosperity or whatever you want to talk about there. Sorry about that. I needed a cough button real quick. We were talking about slacktivism and corporate justice there for a second, but we're talking about, you know, the game is created around. So if this is the right move, given the circumstances, yes, it's important, because the alternative, the thing about jail and giving a 12 to 40 year sentence based on what this trial looks like, and for the second and third degree murder charge of George Floyd, is basically the alternative was to set him free, which is not the best way to go about it. So given the circumstances, I'll take the conviction on all three charges. But again, not happy about the prison system at large, which is both ways. This one works both ways. But this is, again, we're talking about in an idealized world. This is what I would view. And this is where I can stick my morals to. This is the idealized world that I envision and hopefully can stick my own morals to. And maybe it'll create some sort of difference. But that'll be over a long period of time that I will never see in my lifetime. And that's okay. We'll just push as far closer as we can get and see what we can get to in this infinite game that is life and reform and change. It's just an infinite game, because you just got to have resources and the will to push your change forward. And resources have not become much of a problem anymore, because we're starting to see people on all sides of the coin start to obtain resources to make a difference. There's just so much out there to actually make change. And some of it just comes down to will more than the resources. And so the will, by standing on a moral ground, will help you going forward and making things a little bit better. Let's talk about corporate justice real quick before we wrap up this case of the story. So corporate justice is basically the idea of making social activism cool. The corporations are all obliged to make statements after a conviction of George Floyd, because this George Floyd trial mattered a lot, and people felt that if they didn't make a statement, then it meant that they were racist. And now we are conforming to that idea, because now it's becoming an expectation. The corporations are doing it without having anything waiting. They did it back when the NFL flipped, because they wanted to – by the way, this is the thing with the NFL, is that the NFL was the foremost corporation against Black Lives Matter in America because of what they did to Colin Kaepernick in fear of repercussions from Trump. They were the foremost corporation in anti-Black Lives Matter, and now they've flipped on that issue because – that's what the corporate dollar suggests. Is it cynicism? Yes. But ultimately, it's hardcore capitalism, baby. We saw what just happened in the European Super League. It's hardcore capitalism, baby, is that if they felt if you don't stay silent, this is why I don't commend, this is why I commend people who do stay silent on these issues. And I know it's not because they have alternative viewpoints like Wrangler. The reason I commend people for staying silent on some of this stuff from a corporate standpoint is because you have nothing to offer the conversation. All you're offering is at the bare minimum nothing, and what you can do is real legitimate damage. Now that corporate justice has become a normal thing, and it's not like Ben and Jerry's making awesome Black Lives Matter statements back before the summer of George Floyd, it is legitimately, corporate justice has become the norm now, and so you're not bucking any trend. You're bucking a trend if you don't commit corporate justice and put out a statement of very public relations-y words about George Floyd. If you don't do that, or if you're ESPN and you commit all of your coverage to the conviction of Derek Chauvin on Tuesday afternoon, or if you're ESPN NBA on TNT, and although like their perspective is important on it, committing all the time to George Floyd and Derek Chauvin, or asking NBA players about Derek Floyd, Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. Wow, I messed that up bad. Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. Then it's sending a message from where that is, but sometimes you just don't have something to contribute to the conversation, which I think is important, that the bare minimum is zero. Like, zero is fine. And to be honest, silence is not zero. So maybe it is important to do something, but sometimes it doesn't mean that you're contributing to it. Let's not make it more than it is. You're not contributing to some larger conversation. It's why for myself, who only has 50,000 social media followers, I can say nothing and go unnoticed, but then put out this radio show and say, hey, we wanted to talk about this instead of, you know, the platform wasn't right, podcast wasn't the right platform, Instagram wasn't the right platform, here's a radio show, I want to talk about this stuff at a different level and more about the reaction than the events itself, because, like I mentioned off the top, I'm a white dude from California. I had to learn a lot, and there were some growing pains during the summer of George Floyd. I had to learn that, hey, this is not my fight. I'm an ally in this fight, but this is not my fight to be had. And so I had to go through the growing pains of that when this all first began, and learning a little bit more about myself and, you know, growing as a person at, you know, 18 versus 19 makes a big deal in terms of growing as a person because of perspective and things like that. And I recognize also that perspective will take a long time, and I'm never going to get it right because, again, there will always be my blind spots. I'm probably missing on some of these blind spots right now, and it might sound kind of offensive. It's okay. I'm trying. I'm doing my best. It's out of the goodness of my heart. I'm trying to articulate what I want to say, but also not be offensive in a certain case, because recognizing that other people have different experiences than myself. And this is the difficult part that corporate justice has to deal with, is that same point that I just mentioned, is recognizing that there are different perspectives than yourself, which is why diversity at the top is super important. If you have diversity at the top, someone will maybe tell Mark Davis, hey, this is not a good idea to I can breathe statement, because Mark Davis took responsibility for the tweet, which sounds about right, that he went down to the social media department and said, this is very important. It was so important to the organization. Think about that. The tweet was so important to the organization and to the corporation, I should say. The tweet was so important to the corporation that the owner was taking part of this. He was taking a lead on what the statement was going to be. This is the owner of the team, that it was so important that he was going to take a lead on this story. Or he's protecting someone within the organization, which would be a ballsy move by him to do, when it would be so easy to just fire someone over it or reprimand someone for it. Mark Davis coming out and putting his name on it was ballsy by him. It's a real leadership move. It's a great job. I will give Mark Davis the credit for that. It was a great job to take the responsibility on this. Even if the responsibility was his own, he did not have to do that. So commend him for that. Like, the rest of it, tone deaf, a billionaire white guy, second-generation billionaire white guy, by the way, inherited the team from his dad, whose money comes from football. So also just got a giant publicly funded stadium and lives in Martha's Vineyard out in California. Like, look, understand – or I'm sorry, not Martha's Vineyard, Napa Valley, which might have Martha's Vineyard, but whatever. Obviously, rich white dude, tone-deaf move. But the leadership Mark Davis had after that, commend him for that. I forgot to mention that off the top there. But anyways, you don't have to be heard on everything. That's kind of the important thing that I wanted to talk about with corporate justice, is that silence can be a negative, but silence can also just be zero. And I didn't want to stay silent all the way through. I wanted to at least articulate for myself, even if it's just for myself, I hope it's not just for myself, but again, we have what, a few, maybe a dozen people listen to this. So it takes a little bit of the burden off for myself, but that's just kind of part of the conversation, isn't it? It's just part of being in this conversation, right? All right. Let's hit some music just to kind of like get things back in the swing of things. Cause I genuinely need a break to transition out of this into Anthony Davis and over to some baseball. All right, we are back here. So Anthony Davis is going to play tonight for the Los Angeles Lakers. And one of the reason I wanted to talk about it is because it's something that actually matters in the grand scheme of things. It's one of those few things that like genuinely makes a huge difference in the NBA at this point, because Anthony Davis coming back to play for the Lakers starts to lay the foundation for the tides are turning for the Lakers to get back in his swing. Because the thing I said about Anthony Davis is that Anthony Davis might be back by the end of the regular season. He'll be playing at like 75% when he gets to the playoffs, I would have guessed. Now we are 1 month away from the start of the postseason. It literally starts 1 month from tomorrow is when the NBA postseason tips off. And Anthony Davis is just starting to get back into the swing of things. And they said originally it was going to be 4 weeks. It ended up now being 10 weeks by the time Anthony Davis came back, because they said he would be back by All-Star break's end. And now we are 6 weeks removed from All-Star break's end. And Anthony Davis is now coming back to the Lakers, just like we said he would. And now it's going to be about 70% right now, about 70, 75%. It's his call. He's going to get back into the swing of things so that maybe by round two he can kick it into 100%. Once they get to the playoffs. And this is exactly around the time, I probably would have guessed like a week or two later, but this is around the time when Anthony Davis is going to start getting into the swing of things again. And the Lakers are going to get Anthony Davis back, and it's going to prevent the fall from being as bad as it is, and LeBron's going to get back at some point, and he'll work his way back to 100%, and by then the Lakers will have their team ready to go win a championship, right? If this is the point where you expect me to say wrong, you are incorrect, because the Lakers should be able to roll through that Western Conference as long as they hold on to their nice little seeding there. I think they're still like 4 games ahead of the 7th spot, so they should be okay. Let's see, Western Conference standings. Lakers are, yep, they are 2.5 games ahead of the Portland Trail Blazers right now. Should be fine, probably going to play the Nuggets in the first round. And again, just tough break for the Nuggets, because we talked about this last week. It's 4 teams competing for 2 spots. They've lost to Jamal Murray. Jokic is the MVP. That's all I can say. It's just been a tough, tough break for the Denver Nuggets, who are going to end up having a 5-4 matchup against Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Just a tough break. But they're going to be okay in the grand scheme of things. Why are they going to be okay in the grand scheme of things? Because Denver Nuggets got that MVP season from Jokic. So they'll just reconvene and figure that out going forward. Even if they may have peaked, they can always just reconvene and come back the next season. But anyways, let's bring it back full circle to the Los Angeles Lakers, because the Lakers are probably going to roll through that Western Conference. Them and the Clippers are the two teams that are in that elite tier when healthy. The Clippers, everyone's got questions about the Clippers. A great way that someone put it is just, we're not going to know what the Clippers are until the Clippers get to the playoffs. Like, that's when we're going to find out whether the Clippers got the stuff, is when they play Phoenix and when they play the Lakers. That's when we're going to know if Kawhi and Phoenix have something in them. And isn't this the best way Kawhi goes? When Kawhi's doubted, when Kawhi's a lower seed, who's got to beat some of these big boys like the 76ers, or the Milwaukee Bucks, or the Golden State Warriors, or the Miami Heat of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, or the Oklahoma City Thunder that year, who, when Kevin Durant won MVP, Like, isn't that when Kawhi Leonard's at his best, is when he's got to take down the big dogs? Not when Kawhi Leonard is the big dog, at least that's been experienced, because Kawhi Leonard got bounced last year early in the playoffs when everything was falling apart for the Clippers. So isn't that just the way Kawhi Leonard wants it, is to be the underdog at this point? Who knows? But one thing I have found interesting, by the way, the Pelicans, woof, just looking at the standings right now, woof, woof, things are going bad for those Pelicans right now. But the way I see it, back to the Lakers, full circle, the Lakers are that team that should be dominating, and they're following the timeline exactly as we thought it was going to be, which is Anthony Davis is going to come back from injury. He's going to get to about 70% by the end of the regular season, and he'll get all the way up to 100% by the time round two of the playoffs rolls around, because that's when the Lakers are going to have to start caring, because then they play Utah. And Utah, for all the shit they talk about Utah, they could pull that upset against a lesser team, not the Lakers, but they could give the Lakers a run for their money. Six games, bad break for the Lakers, an injury here or there, and the series turns the same way Miami's series turned against the Bucks once Giannis Antetokounmpo went out, and you knew that the Miami Heat were going to beat the Milwaukee Bucks. It can turn almost on a dime, and we can watch it happen live before our eyes as the playoffs roll around a month later than we expected, because there's this weird void in sports now, because we were all anticipating that this is the time that naturally the NBA playoffs start, and we haven't gotten to see those NBA playoffs start yet. So it has been interesting indeed, interesting that the NBA playoffs have gone the way that they have, and that the Lakers season is going to go exactly as we thought it would in terms of when LeBron and Anthony Davis would come back, that they would free fall a little bit. But ultimately, and we said it last week, just tough breaks the Nuggets that you're going to have to play the Lakers in the first round. With news of Anthony Davis's return and LeBron obviously not too far on the horizon, because his was a high ankle sprain, which is a lesser injury than Davis's, which was put him out 10 weeks. I'm guessing LeBron's been out like 3 or 4 weeks or something. It is not quite as bad as it seems. And things are going to be all right for the Lakers. We going to be all right. And that's the interesting thing that the Lakers find themselves in, is we're going to be the 5 or the 4 seed. And that's our path to the finals, is going through Utah and maybe going through the Clippers on the road. But the Clippers series wouldn't be on the road. The Utah series would be on the road. And that's going to make things uber interesting once we get to that part of the playoffs. But this is the thing with NBA regular season basketball. Last year was when it finally occurred to me, regular season basketball does not matter at all. I have watched very little regular season basketball in the last about 4 months, not since the season first tipped off back in December. I've watched very, very little regular season basketball. And the reason is because it simply doesn't matter. I know who the 5 good teams are. I know who the second round exits are. It's going to be interesting to see those get proven correct or wrong, or figure out why they were proven correct or wrong once we play 7 games playoff series with small sample sizes and all that fun jazz that leads to the Miami Heat pulling up to the NBA Finals, but also ruining an epic duel between Giannis and LeBron. But so be it. Still was an epic series, but it was still fun. We're just waiting for that to roll around again. It's like 2 months out of the year that NBA basketball actually gets interesting. 3 months if you throw in free agency. Free agency in basketball is uber interesting. Or when there's a league-shattering trade like James Harden to Brooklyn, which we broke here live on the Take It Easy radio show. It was actually our season opener back in January, was live on the air. James Harden was traded to the Brooklyn Nets. And that's kind of just the thing that rolls around for months on end, is we're just waiting for that fun NBA action to come back. And we just wait and wait and wait for it to come back every 2 months. At least this year I have been, because I've been ready for the playoffs for however long. It's why I really want that season to get shortened. At least with baseball, I have the Padres to root for. So, for example, we're going to watch the Padres right now as Tommy Pham singles into right field with 2 outs in the bottom of the second. The thing with the Padres that at least is interesting is that these games are just like entertaining to watch now and then. I mean, I haven't watched a game since Dodgers week, and I'll get them all this weekend because guess what? There's another Dodgers week kicking off for the Padres against the Dodgers this week, which is going to have less jazz just because they're so close to each other. But, hey, Dodgers week gets me interested in the Padres again. That's why I haven't watched the Padres since last Sunday until now, and they lost twice to the Brewers, but it's too much. About 40 baseball games is what I'm good for during the season, and 40 baseball games is more than what I'd be watching in the NBA, which is about 40 total NBA games during the season. I think that's a fair-ish number to evaluate with. I'd watch like 40-ish baseball games during the season. Or, I'm sorry, 40-ish NBA games during the season. I'd pretty much watch only the Padres. So I'd say I watch about 40 MLB games, about 40 NBA games, follow the news and notes, and that gives me the information I need to properly evaluate the seasons because the regular seasons don't matter. It all matters once we get to postseasons in these sports. Football, at the very least, is hugely entertaining, and these weeks feel like they matter a whole lot because it's like a soap opera. Even when they genuinely probably don't matter that much, it's still super-duper interesting to watch it play out the way it does because, damn, isn't football awesome? Why we spend so much time talking about it? It is king of the American sports landscape, and you can cram it all into 7 hours on one Sunday. Makes life even more easier as a sports fan when you like to diversify your interests and live a more fulfilled life, or you like to podcast about it, that too, and do radio shows, that also. All right, 1-2 to Ha-Sung Kim here. He is the second baseman for the Padres. They're playing afternoon baseball against the Brewers. Adrian Hauser is their starting pitcher. Not sure if he's an opener or not, but the Brewers don't have a ton of great starting pitching. Runner on first, two outs here is Tommy Pham as they throw over to Daniel Vogelbach, just a giant of a man, first baseman for the Brewers. Picks over to try and get Pham. Pham dives back safely. Brewers have a better record than the Padres, which makes me a little bit sad as a Padres fan, but I always know it's a small sample size. I know my team is good this year, so I don't have to worry about these little trends at all because they've happened to go lose four of their last five, so just a bad stretch right now. 1-2 to Kim is strike number three. Got him on the two-seamer as Ha-Sung Kim strikes out, ending the second inning. Now we can take you around the baseball landscape. Angels and Rangers, 1-0 Anaheim in the third inning. Oakland up 7-4 against the Twins in the third inning. I remember when we had one of those epic games during the playoffs last year, not between Minnesota and Oakland, but between the White Sox and Oakland, where it was just a crazy high-scoring game. We also had one of those between Houston and Oakland, where just crazy high-scoring game that got us super-duper interested. So that should be fun. We got Giants and Phillies, 5-5 in the ninth. I remember I said just before coming on last week, we had a walk-off for the Braves. Maybe you'll get a walk-off for the Phillies here on the Take It Easy podcast or radio show. Damn, it's just a force of habit, isn't it? Force of habit on that podcast versus radio show. This is the Take It Easy radio show, people, and we are live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, talking about the Padres and the Brewers and filling time during a commercial break. Because we don't have commercial breaks here. Theoretically, I could. I could just go blank and do the cough button, but that's just one way to pass the time, other than just playing this awesome intro music that we've now used on our podcast. Love that music so much. I've been using it on our podcast now, which you can check out anywhere and everywhere that podcasts are available. If you're listening to this on demand, can probably just skip forward another 30 seconds here. I'm guessing that's about when the Padre game will come back. Because I only had like two things I want to talk about today, Anthony Davis and George Floyd and Derek Chauvin. And we got through a bunch of those. Steph Curry talking about the MVP. It's just weird that we're talking about MVPs because Jokic has to win the MVP. It's just weird. It's something to talk about, but again, this is why I think that this thing gets a little overwhelming when we talk about the NBA like this too much. There's just not enough interesting stuff that goes on in the regular season. It's why people love having all of this time over and over and over again. So That's okay. Denelson Lamet struck out 14 Brewers in September 2019. Two players struck out three times in that game. Mike Moustakas, and I'm going to go Trent Grisham, just because that seems more fun to guess the former Padre. I'm not sure if they're going to give the answer right now or later, but that's the trivia question for you. It's Trent Grisham. I don't know if that's the actual answer or not, but so be it. All right, Craig Stammen enters the game for the Padres in relief of starter, I'm guessing probably Ryan Weathers or Adrian Morejon. No idea, but one of those two is probably the starting pitcher. Oh, Denelson Lamet. Nice. Denelson Lamet is back. Awesome. They're working him back from the Tommy J, or not the Tommy J, the injury he had during the playoffs last year. Nice. Welcome back, Denelson Lamet. Two innings, I'll take it. Stammen comes into the game. He is going to face the pitcher, Adrian Hauser. So it looks like Hauser is not an opener. He's an actual starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. All right, all right. 0-1 on the way here from Stammen is strike two. 0-2 now, Craig Stammen to Adrian Hauser. Is this just a great way to watch a Padres game? You're damn right it is. Stammen is definitely, like, love-hate guy for the Padres fans. They don't really love him, but he's done pretty well recently. And now they've moved him out of, like, big inning situations. He gets to be kind of an earlier guy in the rotation, and I think it's a better role for him. At least we don't have to watch him blow games late here. As ball one comes in, 1-2 is the count. 1-2 from Stammen to Hauser is strike three, swing and a miss, and the Padres have out number one in the third inning here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, even though it's not actually on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. We're just kind of listening and telling you what's going on here. So next up, we have Jackie Bradley Jr., who has the only hit of the game for the Milwaukee Brewers. Only hit of the game for the Padres came from Tommy Pham right before when we got on the air for the first time. So JBJ steps up to the plate as they shift Machado way over to the right side. This is something that happens in baseball now. I was talking about this before. You think that a ball gets a base hit into the shift as strike one comes in to Jackie Bradley Jr. You think that, like, a ball gets hit in the shift and then all of a sudden, like, it's a base hit because, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours of watching baseball has convinced you that this is a base hit, and then the ball is hit right to the person, and the shift throws off your perceptions as Jackie Bradley Jr. whiffs on a strike two. It messes up your perceptions. I love it so much when it happens. I give a little, like, half-hearted chuckle every time I think that there's a base hit, but it's not actually a base hit. As Stammen has the 0-2 on the way. And fouled off by Jackie Bradley Jr. He'll stay alive here. Jackie Bradley, the former Boston Red Sox. Jackie Bradley Jr., now a Milwaukee Brewer. I would say a precipitous decline, but it's not actually a precipitous decline for Jackie Bradley because the Red Sox have been poor for the last couple of years. They'll probably be poor again this year. They're not going to play very well, even though their record is pretty good right now. Let me see that. Did they come back down to earth? Let's see if Boston came back down to earth. Is the 0-2 on its way to JBJ? Just missed inside for ball one. Yeah, Boston's still doing pretty good. They're in, what, last 10, 7-3, 10-12-6 on the season. They had that seven-game win streak, and then they lost a few in there. They went 3-3 in the aftermath. So, you know what? Still pretty good season for Boston. They're 12-6. I guess that makes what? I guess they were 7-3, now 12-6. That makes them 5-3 in their last eight. Not bad. Not bad indeed, Boston. I'll give you credit there. Credit is due. Making it look pretty good. Same thing with the Mariners. Credit where credit's due. You're having a good start to the year. You'll fall back down to earth at some point, but it's a damn good start to the season so far. As Stammen throws the 1-2 to the JBJ, it is down in the dirt. Try to get him on that, like, slider or curveball. But JBJ not biting on that one. Stammen's trying to work around him here. Or not work around him, but not give him something he can hit. There's no need when you're ahead in the count. They show Christian Yelich not in the lineup today for whatever his reasons may be. I guess afternoon game before they go back on the road. But no Yelly in the lineup. Yelly belly. as JBJ grounds one to Ha-Sung Kim at second on the first out, numero two, for the San Diego Padres. I don't know why I did that like gringo. Out numero dos para los San Diego Padres. Y ahora es Daniel Vogelbach. Vogelbach es muy gigante. Like 6'4", Daniel Vogelbach. Man's a big dude. I remember he made an all-star game 1 year for those terrible Mariners teams, and then got DFA'd. It's been a long road back for Vogelbach, but here he is finding his place as the first baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. Is a power-hitting two-hitter as curveball from Stammen comes in for Stee, Reich number one. As Vogelbach, love saying Vogelbach, but Vogelbach was like DFA'd straight up by the Seattle Mariners and now ends up on Milwaukee. It's a nice little turn for him. It's a nice little turn for Daniel Vogelbach. And obviously the All-Star game is going to be kind of the highlight of his career, like when you see his resume. It's like when you look up like the NFL draft on Wikipedia and it tells you players that made a Pro Bowl, but it doesn't differentiate players that made one Pro Bowl or players that made eight Pro Bowls. So you see, like, Demaryius Thomas, and you see, like, one dude like Ronnie Brown in 2007 who made one Pro Bowl, as Daniel Vogelbach laps a base hit into center field, right center field. Just a little whap of the baseball, drops in like a little bloop single into right field. As Vogelbach got it off the very end of the bat, if he'd gotten it off the barrel, it would have been a double in the gap. But just nicked the end of the bat like a little slap at the baseball, and he's got himself a nice base hit with two outs. Move it on over to Avisail Garcia, which Avisail Garcia and Travis Shaw and Omar Navarez are your big hitters. Like, woof. It has been a rough sledding for the Milwaukee Brewers. But I guess Keston Hiura and Rick Christian Yelich aren't playing today, so they'll be okay. Like, their roster's better than it shows. They've got, like, Jace Peterson as their eight hitter for some reason, not really sure why, but that's okay. They'll figure that out. Jace Peterson's like one of those really old Padres rejects. Kind of cool that he's still hanging around with his 136 average and 513 OPS. For those who don't know, about 220 is the league average, and OPS, the league average, is about 800. And he's got 500 and 136. So still hanging around, Jace Peterson. One last grasp to keep your MLB career alive. Still pretty cool that he's still hanging around after being one of those many, many Padre rejects. Because even you, Jace Peterson, still have a chance in the league. Count's now 0-2 to Avisail Garcia, by the way. Kind of forgot to bring the count back forward and got into the radio mode a little bit. But we'll see how much time we got left here, because we only got about 30 minutes or 30 seconds left on the air. So let's see if Stammen can get through the third before this time runs out here. 0-2 on the way to Garcia is a ball. So I guess that's all we're going to get there. But maybe one more pitch in here. I'll start going through this conclusion here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Follow on Facebook and Instagram, Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, and check out all of the great content coming out on the Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash lineup. Game Chat Boys coming at you tomorrow. Wrestle Talk and the D is going to be here. State of Pro Wrestling podcast, all that jazz as the 1-2 comes to Avisail Garcia. And we got ourselves a strike three, ladies and gentlemen. And so without further ado, thank you for stopping in today, and as always, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow for our second episode of the week. Take it easy, everybody.